This is the Data Privacy Detective, and today we're going to talk about data breaches, and not what you read in the headlines, but we're going to get under the hood if it were a vehicle. And with us today to talk about this is a real expert in the data breach area, and it's Andy Lunsford. Andy, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Andy, you're an attorney, and you founded and are CEO of a software company by the name BreachRx. And as I understand it, this is a company that has created an incident management platform and helps businesses reduce their risk of a data breach by moving beyond kind of traditional spreadsheets and documents into a SaaS, software as a service platform that keeps pace with the things that are changing in the area, regulatory, law, contractual obligations, all sorts of things.
Yeah, that's right. You know, our focus is really helping companies be proactively prepared for any incident they may face so they can respond to it quickly, recover, and rather that whole scope is, you know, how do we make these incidents less of a crisis for a company and more of a routine business process, just kind of recognizing that it is literally an endemic issue that every company faces, and how can we make this less painful for everybody involved?
Right. Well, there's a lot of pain in front of that. And you've used the word incident a few times. Just help the listeners understand, what's the difference between an incident and a breach?
Sure. Yeah. So breach is a, you know, legally defined word in a lot of these regulations. And so when a company declares that something was a breach, that, you know, basically requires a whole slew of notification requirements for that company. And so incident is one way to talk about things that maybe don't rise to that level. And usually when something crosses from incident to breach, it's whether personal information, personally identifiable information has been accessed or acquired by another party that's unauthorized to have that information. Now,
but they may not have stolen it. I mean, somebody might have lost a computer for a day and then they get it back.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be as simple as a misdirected email that, you know, went, you know, one customer's information went to the wrong customer. Another classic example is like at a pharmacy, if you know, the one patient's information goes to another patient unintentionally. But I think
not considered a breach. That's a different thing. That's when the personal information of a lot of people is somehow released to what is probably a bad actor. Is that sort of a simple way to understand this?
Yeah, that's an easy way to understand it. I think another piece that makes this even more complicated more recently is that now incidents are also, whether the personal information is involved or not, are also reason to notify. So security incidents, and, you know, there's an overlap and difference between privacy incidents and security incidents, but now, a lot of the regulators are saying, hey, if you have security incidents, we actually want to be notified about those too.
Well, there's some countries that are saying you got to tell the regulator within 6 hours of an incident. We'll see how easy that is for people. But let's get right into it now. The companies you work with, how do they respond? And what's the difference between companies that have developed a response plan, hoping they'll never need to use it? It's kind of like life insurance. You hope you're not going to die. But the difference between those that have a response plan and those who react without one. What's the experience you see?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a major difference between being reactive and proactive when it comes to preparing for these incidents. So having an incident response plan is absolutely a good starting point. And I think, unfortunately, so many companies do have that mentality of like, oh, I hope I never have to use this. But the reality is pretty much every company does. And the problem, I think, when you have a document that has that sort of mindset in it, it's often not super detailed in what you actually need to do. It's usually much more of a high level framework, like, hey, here are the team members that are going to be involved. Here are some of the outside vendors we want to get on the phone and have working for us. Maybe we even have some of them on retainer. But it doesn't actually give you actionable steps of, okay, this happened, so now we need to do, why. And so that's where I see is actually this bigger and bigger change amongst companies, is those that are actually practicing responding to incidents and preparing more than a high level framework in a document. They're actually, you know, building out specific plans for specific scenarios, like a ransomware scenario, a phishing scenario, or et cetera, any kind of thing that you see happening that they're prepared to act on those right away and not spend a lot of time kind of spinning your wheels trying to figure out what's required.
Yeah, so the best company would be one that not only has a plan, but has actually practiced it. Well, help us understand, okay, so there's a data breach, and probably everybody in the United States has received at one time or another notice that your data has been breached and we give you a free year of credit count, free credit access to the credit agencies or, something. But what actually happens? The data has been exposed and taken by somebody who may not be known, and what really happens? Where does the data go, and can we ever know if it's ever completely recovered?
So it's unfortunately the answer I have here is not super rosy in that way. Where that information goes is very hard to track. So the adversary that's taken it and maybe proven in some way that they have that data, even if you've negotiated some deletion of that data or giving back that data or in a ransomware situation, unencrypting that data, it's very easy for that adversary to have copied that data in any number of ways and put it in any number of places. And we often see it come up, in the dark web. It'll get sold because it can be used to, do personal identity theft for the individual's information that's involved. That's the reality. I think there are some groups that this is probably, I don't know if people have talked about this on your podcast before, but there are groups like the Revil group in Russia that have actually made this into a business where they create ransomware as a service where people, these adversaries.
Oh, absolutely. And this is not some kid in the basement. This is a business. This is a serious business. Yeah, right. And the reality is, otherwise, I understand it, forensics can pretty well tell if the data has been exfiltrated, to use one of the words we use in this business. But that doesn't mean you can tell if they have kept a copy and are selling it on the dark web. I'd be right.
Right, exactly. And that's what the forensics are trying to determine is, was the data actually accessed or exfiltrated or both? And that's, it's really, next to impossible to follow the thread much further than that once it leaves a company's, machines.
And this could be your medical information, could be your social security number, could be bank account information. All sorts of things can get hacked. And this is what's at risk. So it's really important for a company to have personnel in charge of how to deal with this. And let me turn now. We're going to come back to what can individuals do whose data has been taken. But how about the company personnel who are on the line here to try to prevent, of course, an incident or a breach, but then to be responsible for what happens when you have one? And we've got a recent, I think it's the first conviction, criminal conviction in the United States of a CISO, somebody in charge for a company, the data breach, the Joe Sullivan case. Tell us about that. What happened?
So this is the former Uber CISO, Joe Sullivan. Yes, it was the first time that we've seen an executive being criminally charged for failing to notify when the regulator expected a notification. And so it's very controversial in this space because, one, it's going after somebody personally and not just the corporation itself, but also, at the time when this happened, there really was no generally applicable to that situation federal requirement to notify. Basically, Uber was under an FTC investigation for an earlier breach they'd had. And there was an expectation from the FTC that there would be ongoing notifications of other breaches, but there was not an actual requirement at the time. And so that's what's kind of the rub here, is that they're holding him accountable, saying he should have known better and notified. And so it's tough. I mean, I think that obviously I'm a huge privacy buff. I believe in the right to privacy and think that companies really need to take this seriously when it comes to protecting consumer data. But in this case, it really, is one of those instances where, I often make this analogy to, if you imagine as a consumer, if you were to have someone break into your house and steal valuables from you, and then this is the way the situation works in the data breach context, it'd be, if you didn't notify the police, immediately or very soon thereafter, you could face being fined for having that break-in happen, and then also potentially in this case, the Joe Sullivan, go to jail. So you're really kind of a triple victim here of that scenario. And I think that that's just taking it too far. I don't know that sending Joe Sullivan to jail is going to actually make companies' data more secure, make people care about privacy more. I think there are other ways to go about doing this.
Now, there were certainly allegations. We know there was a conviction, but allegations are one thing. That Mr. Sullivan not only failed to notify, but participated in something of a cover-up. I'm not saying that's true or false, but that's nonetheless, he got convicted. And I don't think anybody's in favor of people who try to cover something up deliberately. But, what does this mean then to people being willing to take on a role like a CISO within a company? After all, when there's an incident, as you've described it, you're not sure yet whether it's a breach. You have to investigate. Take the United States, of any state so far in the federal government that requires reporting every incident.
Yeah, it really puts the professionals that are in charge of making these decisions and all their teams that are involved in helping them make these decisions in a really tight, hard place, because on the one hand, your job, and I think a lot of lawyers can probably relate to this, is to protect your company from liability, do things that are going to minimize the risk, maintain and shareholder value for the company when you're publicly traded. And so when a breach happens or an incident happens or a potential breach or incident happens, it's not in your company's interest necessarily to declare immediately as soon as possible that, oh, we might have had something happen. Everybody needs to know about this, because that can disrupt customer trust and churn. And that kind
of thing. Well, it might not be a breach. It might not be. It might be an incident that a laptop has been lost. Okay. Well, question. You don't know it's a breach yet. You say, right. Oh, we've had a breach of 10 million. That can affect the stock price if it's a public. So you have to be a little careful here. And then once you know it is, to whom do you report? Let's say it's a global company. Fair to say there's no agreement around the world on how to deal with these things.
Yeah. That's the other complicated piece here is that, there's 180 plus regulations worldwide around these incidents.
And within the United States, 50 states, and they're getting into the action.
Yeah, and all the territories. Yeah. Plus there's, so it's complicated. Depending on the sector you're in. Yeah, exactly. So it's a lot to sort through if you're a worldwide cover. If you have customers across the world, your company has a lot to sort through. And when you're talking about deadlines like India's of 6 hours, that's
6 hours to report incidents too. They don't use the word breach. It's a different thing. Well, what do you, let's look ahead here. I mean, we don't have a world Congress that makes the laws, but do we need an international standard or even a US standard? Would that help both those who want to strengthen privacy rights and the ability of companies to deal with situations like this?
Absolutely. I think that everybody from a consumer perspective, from a company perspective would benefit from having a universal standard. The complication comes here is that there's a lot of power in having a different standard than everyone else's. So in the world economics, the EU holds a lot of power right now because GDPR has stronger privacy rules than other places. And so the flow of data, for instance, is a big issue there. And by them having the higher standard, it really makes the world kind of adjust to them, and a lot of business flow through the EU in a different way than it would if they didn't hold that standard. And so that's this sort of conflict that is happening. I think there are ways, though, where you could come to more of an agreed upon standard and still have, like, as far as here are the standard ways to notify, and here's a standard system for notifying, even if you want to have, greater levels of detail that one country needs from another, one state needs from another, or faster timeline from one state to another. If we could at least get on one uniform system, that would allow, you know, a company to report in one way to all of these entities at once, I think that would really save a lot of time and ultimately get notice to consumers faster, which is really what they're, what, you know, they're trying to achieve here, is that let consumers know as soon as possible so they can take actions to protect themselves.
Right. So once we're notified as consumers or as users, we can change our passwords. We can change our credit cards if needed. We can let our bank know. So it's for mutual protection. And it sounds like something that countries and states ought to be able to agree on, no matter what their political philosophy or whether they're democratic or totalitarian. It just helps everybody.
Yeah, I really do think it's not a Democrat Republican issue. I think it's really it's something everybody wants your information to be more secure. And I think there is a path. It's just can we get enough people willing to do it?
Well, let's see if somebody can do it. It's what we did with time zones in the latter part of the 19th century. I mean, it's different cities, different time zones. It was the fabled President Chester Arthur who said, nope, we're going to have certain time zones. And then the world created time zones. And that's worked very well with no political overtones. But let me ask you this as we conclude here. And what advice do you have for individuals who get a notice from a company that their personal data, along with many other people's data, has been breached? What can individuals do?
Yeah, well, I think the first step is for that account, whichever, you know, company is letting you know the information is breached, you at least bare minimum want to change your password and login information for that account as soon as possible. That would be
immediately.
Usually the companies help facilitate that by requiring a reset the next time you log in, but that's bare number one.
Yeah, and also if they have it available, certainly use double factor or multi-factor authentication.
Yes. And I think I do it across any account that offers it, but multi-factor authentication where you have an authenticator app, because there is some multi-factor authentication with text messaging that is not quite as secure. There is some ways that sophisticated adversaries can take over in those situations, but having an authenticator app or another device that generates these one-time, you know, 30-second changes in code is the biggest step that is easily accessible to consumers to use. I think also using a password manager is really helpful.
Password manager, you know, and that's certainly on the rise, isn't it? And they aren't so hard to deal with. People can be afraid of them, but it's really pretty easy.
Yeah, and having those password managers automatically generate very complex, long passwords for you makes your account and makes it unique, because the pattern for most consumers is you're trying to remember these, and so you use the same password, you know, multiple times in different places. And so,
or you write that, you create a little book and then you lose it. And then, boy, what have you done? You know?
So, yeah.
And a password manager is a great idea that have a vault where it is a protective measure.
Right.
What else? I mean, sometimes people overreact and, you know, cancel things they don't need to. What's the rest of your advice to individuals who have been one of the many victims of a data?
Yeah, I don't think it. I think the reality is pretty much all of us have had our information breached in some combination of companies. Most of us, I'd probably say, have multiple. I've had some instances for myself, even with the OPM breach for the government that has very detailed information about my background.
Well, the IRS has been breached. Defense Department has been breached. This is, that's right.
So I think that it is overly reactionary to just immediately cancel accounts if a business has had a breach. But I think that, I mean, if it's a continual issue and they're not taking security seriously, maybe that's a different company you don't want to do business with. But just the instance of it happening, just the disruption it can cause you to try to, especially like a financial account, for instance, you might have all kinds of things tied to your credit card, for instance, that can be a lot of work to unpack and get set up. And so I think the simple, quick change in your password and your username, making sure multi-factor authentication is in place, those things can cover you from most of the risk.
Good point. And just on the credit card point you raised, it's one thing for a credit card company or bank to block a transaction if it's phony. It's another thing to cancel the card. I mean, that really can create a lot of time and effort for individuals.
Yeah.
Any concluding comments? Fascinating topic.
this space is changing all the time. And so I think for those of us that are in it, if you love learning and you love that kind of intersection between the law and technology, it's a really fun place to be. And I definitely feel like it's one of the most gratifying areas of law you can be involved in.
Well, Andy, thank you for graduating from attorney to CEO of a company, BreachRx, and giving us your thoughts today about what really happens in data breaches. What we as individuals and certainly any company personnel involved in dealing with these things will want to avoid what happened to Joe Sullivan. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And as always, I'll remind us all, protecting your personal privacy begins with you.